sports, entertainment, and Maine's best guest list. On The Pulse, AM 620 WZON, WZONThePulse.com, and the WZON app. This is Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Well, yes, it is. Good morning. Welcome into a Sunday, the 28th day of January. Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell with you. This is the best of Downtown, our look back at some of our favorite conversations from the past week. It's brought to you every Sunday at this time, as the show is Monday through Friday, by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Guests of our program come your way on the G&M Family Market phone line. G&M on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. Open every day, 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. A great collection of conversations for you this morning, including David Roth of Deadspin, Mike Lowe of the Portland Press Herald, comedian and actor Christopher Titus, and actress Diane Franklin. All good stuff on this Sunday morning. Kerry, this is the in-betweener. This is the, I would say Sunday without football, because the whole weekend, I don't count the Pro Bowl. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, nobody counts the Pro Bowl, and nobody should count the Pro Bowl.
And then now they don't even get to go to Hawaii like they used to. Like, what's the point? Why bother?
Orlando? Really? No.
Yeah, because that's where football players want to go, is Disney. Yeah, it's a good time right there. Well, anyway, we get ready for the coming week, of course. 1 week from today, the Super Bowl. We'll have lots of Patriots talk for you this coming week on the program. But this morning, let's get it underway by talking to one of our absolute favorites on the show. Writer, tremendous follow on Twitter, and just all-round entertaining guy, David Roth of Deadspin, who joined us this past Wednesday. I want to first of all talk about a terrific piece you've got on Deadspin, The Hot Stove and the Triumph of Shamelessness. And, well, I guess it seems about right, after all we've been through in the last 12 months, that shamelessness would eventually work its way down to the sports world.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I don't want to write all too much, just because I don't want to think about it too much, of this stuff about how everything is Trump now and blah, blah, blah. I don't think anybody really wants to read it, and Lord knows I don't want to think about it any more than I already do. But it's been kind of tough to miss looking at, you know, I guess you kind of still have to call it the hot stove season, because we haven't come up with a term to describe a totally cold stove season like we've had. But it just seems like owners and, you know, execs and just in general, people are a lot more comfortable broadcasting contempt and the fact that they're not trying than they were in years past.
Yeah, and as you point out, it's not only in baseball, it's happening in other sports as well. And there's complete ineptitude, like the Cleveland Browns, and then there's this whole thing that Derek Jeter seems to be doing with the Marlins.
That, to me, is, I mean, the Browns are the Browns, you know, like they will always be with us. And you can see some strategy there in the sense of them stockpiling picks and sort of trying to point things towards the future. And so you could say that they were trying to tank this season for a reason. You know, I mean, they have the first and I think fourth picks in the draft. So does it mean that they can't screw it up? I believe in the Browns. I think they can, but it's different than what Jeter is doing in the sense that MLB allowed this ownership group to buy, you know, one of the 32 franchises they have, and they didn't have enough money to run it. Or they said they don't have enough money. They say they don't have enough money to run it. Whatever it is, they're burning down a roster for nothing, and they're not even, you know, acting apologetic about it. It just doesn't seem to me like a healthy thing for a league to allow a team to do. And I think of the Major League Baseball as being one of our healthier leagues in a lot of ways. So the teams are all flush with money, including the Marlins. They're going to get the same $50 million check from the league that, you know, every team is going to get because of the sale of MLB Media. So it doesn't add up. And yet at the same time, you know, if they're not called to account for it, then, you know, does it matter?
Well, and fan bases in many of these cities seem quite content with mediocrity. And up here, when it comes to the Red Sox fans, the hardcores differentiate between the fans who were there when the team really stunk and what we call the pink hats, those people who jumped on board when they won 3 world championships and are more interested in being there to sing Sweet Caroline than they are to cheer for the team on the field.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in some ways, it's easier to cheer for a bad team than a good team. Not in the sense that it's easier because it's more fun or because it makes, Lord knows, any more emotional sense for you to commit that many hours. But at least then you know what you're about. You know, you have things to hope for. You have things to be angry about. Cheering for a great team, sort of, it can be the source of an identity crisis in some ways if you're inclined in that direction. Sort of, you know, there's no tension in it. There's no drama. The Red Sox, for, you know, more than a century, that was all it was pure pathos. And then in terms of getting good, I mean, it's not anybody's fault there. I could say that for the most part, it seemed like the Red Sox were trying. They just kept kind of screwing it up. But, and coming close, too. It's harder to say that you look at a team like the Tennessee Titans or something like that. It's a lot harder to say that what they're doing is even legible. You know, they continue to field the team every year, and they win between 6 and 9 games. But does that, I mean, like, who's being satisfied by that?
We're talking with David Roth here on Downtown. When it comes to cheering for great teams, Patriots fans have got a lock on that. We've got another Patriots Super Bowl up against the Philadelphia Eagles, two of the more grating sets of fans in the world of professional sports. And so
you said it first.
I ask you this as someone who's not affiliated, not tied into either one. Do people out there hate the New England Patriots because they win? Do they hate them because of the individuals involved? Or, dare I say it, do they hate them because of the fans?
Is there an all of the above option?
Yes, absolutely.
I think that, yeah. I mean, I think it's complicated, though, because if you want to come up with the percentages that comprise that particular solution, I think the fans are a smallish part of it. I mean, the fans are universally reviled outside of New England, as everyone in New England knows. But I think that that's part of the fun of it for a lot of Patriots fans is, you know, not just, obviously you can't play the no one believed in us, we're underdogs card anymore. Not that Bill Simmons and them are not going to try to do it, but it's not a playable card. That's an Uno card in a poker game. You have to get rid of it.
Yeah, now the card is they hate us because they ain't us.
Right, and that, you know what, that can be fun. I get that. I've never cheered for a team that good, but, like, knock yourself out. Life is hard. If that's the way that you want to make yourself feel good, then I salute you. But, it's definitely going to be the sort of thing that fuels a cycle that causes people to continue to hate you, whether because they ain't you or because you keep saying that. But it is undeniable. To me, the issue with them has always been the joylessness of Belichick and the sort of Patriot way culture. I mean, and that's, you know, a problem in the NFL. I think you see teams that seem like they're having a great deal of fun and they believe in each other. And the Patriots do seem to believe in each other and they do seem to, you know, enjoy winning, but there's been this sort of vengefulness to it going, you know, a long way back. I mean, throughout the sort of the Brady Belichick administration. And, you know, I guess in some ways from a practical perspective, you know, football is difficult if that's what it takes to get you motivated, and so be it. It just is not the sort of thing that's very easily admired from outside. I keep thinking of the last Super Bowl parade and Belichick leading a crowd of people who had taken the day off to come to the team's Super Bowl parade in a chant of no days off. Just like, who is this for? Like, why would you chant that even if you didn't take the day off? Days off rule. They're great. They're so much better than days at work.
That's perfect. I have to ask you about this because I have to admit, I don't follow tennis all that closely. When I saw you tweet about this, I don't know who this tennis player is. He's got a name. It looks like he's in Game of Thrones and upset. He's upset, apparently, that people have dug into his social media past and found out what a basically horrible human being he is.
Do you want to say his name? I feel like you should.
I don't have it in front of me. Is it?
It is pronounced. It is certainly from Game of Thrones. It is Tennis Sandgren. He's a tennis player whose name is Tennis. He's from Tennessee. He attended the University of Tennessee on a tennis scholarship. Already things are going to be weird for the guy.
Yeah, no chance.
He makes things a lot worse because of who he follows on Twitter, which are just the most extravagant alt-right Pizzagate conspiracy weirdos. And he was asked about it at the Australian Open, where he went on. He's a, you know, an American tennis player of moderate renown. He's made about $400,000 in 5 years on the tour in prize money, which is, you know, nice work if you can get it, but he's not a top-tier player. He went a lot further at the Aussie Open than he ever has. And he came under some scrutiny, and a British tennis writer asked him why he was tweeting about Pizzagate and following creeps like Mike Cernovich. And he did not handle it well, kind of got real twitchy and defensive. And then today, yesterday, whatever, after he lost to Yan Chung, who's the Korean wonderkind guy, issued a really testy statement about it and then said that and deleted all his tweets. And in some ways, I would almost feel bad for him because I wouldn't want to be judged on my tweets either. But then also, it's really easy to not tweet a lot of the stuff that he tweeted.
Tennis, yeah, but it's spelled with a Y, T-E-N-N-Y.
With a Y, right, yeah. Yes. That's the Game of Thrones touch.
Yeah.
Which is really good.
Tennis Sandgren. So now I'm thinking to set my son's course in life, maybe I should change his Graham. He could change his name from Graham. He could be a chip off the old block, and I could call him hold several part-time jobs, Kimball.
That would be really good. Just make sure you sneak some Ys in there.
Yeah, so you have to do that just to add a touch of class. We're talking with David Roth of Deadspin here on Downtown. Well, speaking of the media, I guess we were speaking of the media. I have this, I don't know what it is. It's self-harm, I believe. But once in a while, I will flip on to Fox News, usually when something is going bad for that side, just to see how they handle. And I can't watch Hannity because that just incites violence and I start throwing things at the set. But I don't know what it is. I have this strange attraction to watching Tucker Carlson, who I honestly believe might be the dumbest person to ever work in the television, quote unquote, news industry. But I'm fascinated by his physical response to things and then his ability to just go down the strangest path possible.
He's amazing, too, because he's a guy that gets, I mean, I agree with your assessment of him. He's a fellow that gets a lot of credit for being smart. Because he has been a magazine journalist in the past, and then also because he sometimes wears a bow tie. He doesn't do it as much anymore. But, I mean, the capacity, just the dexterity to tie a bow tie is more than I think most Fox News hosts have. Like, Lou Dobbs would just stuff it into his mouth. You know, so, like, you got to give him credit where it's due. But what's weird about Tucker, this is his umpteenth rebranding. I mean, he was the establishment conservative on what was the one that Jon Stewart got so mad at? Crossfire? Or like the CNN
yes.
one with Paul Begala?
Yep.
Back in the day. And he kind of cycles out and comes back. And it seems like every time he turns back up, he's gotten, you know, 20% more rancid. And at this point, he's basically an alt-right sort of character as well. And whether he believes this or not, and there's no reason to believe that he is, you know, as deluded about this stuff. Because again, like the guy is educated and he goes to all the right cocktail parties in DC and all that. The fact that he's willing to go ahead and basically at this point toe right up against some real bigoted stuff, like white nationalist stuff, the sort of the edgiest that you can get on Fox. The fact that he's the guy that decided to go there is kind of upsetting. I mean, just in the sense that, you know, it's upsetting when anybody gets up there and starts talking like that, let alone, you know, where it can anger a million old people watching at home. But it is, there's something really bizarre about the idea of the one that supposedly comes from the establishment. Like, no one expects Hannity to do anything but shout. I mean, the guy, he looks like he drew Ronald Reagan's face on a thumb. He's a cartoon. Everybody knows that. Carlson is different, and yet somehow he's different in a way that's worse.
Shamelessness everywhere we go these days, and well, thank God for that, or I wouldn't have anything to do in the evening.
I was going to say, at least we know enough to be embarrassed by how awful.
Exactly. David Roth, thank you so much, as always. A delight to speak with you, and now I'm going to carry around that image of Lou Dobbs for quite some time. I appreciate that.
I appreciate it. I wish I could give you a nicer gift.
David Roth of Deadspin here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we come back, comedian Christopher Titus joins us. It's The Pulse, AM 620 WZON.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
It may not be prime biking season, but it's always a good time to make sure your cycle is in great shape. And there's only one place to go to do that. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. They offer outstanding service and a huge stock. Make sure you like them on Facebook to get updates, shop in person or online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
It's not always whether you win or lose, but who you've got on your team. The Emily Ellis team at Next Home Experience wants you to enjoy the best team chemistry in real estate. If you're looking to buy, sell, rent, or build in the Bangor area, make Emily Ellis' all-star squad your go-to team. Responsive and experienced, the Emily Ellis team will make your real estate quest as smooth as possible. Linda, Jen, Callie, and Emily will listen and prepare your game plan. The Emily Ellis team at 57 Washington Street in Bangor, shooting for your goals. Best of Downtown Sunday morning. Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell with you. Our next guest been making people laugh for more than two decades through his stand-up comedy, his albums, his television show Titus, got a brand new movie coming out as well, and appeared last night at the Gracie Theater at Husson University. We caught up with him earlier this week to talk about his new Amerigeddon tour. So much of your comedy has been based on family. Is it safe to assume that since this is a political show that you've figured out that Washington is even more dysfunctional than most of our families?
Yeah, Congress, I think we've seen in the last couple of days, Congress is by far the worst dysfunctional family we've ever created in America. I didn't want to write the show. I had to write the show. I wrote it to actually bring the country back together. You know, when you say it's political, it's weird. It's kind of pseudo-political. I kind of talk more about us as a society more than the, you know, there's some jokes because it's obvious, but talking about politics right now is like trying to organize an interracial hoedown in 1840. It's just a pain in the butt.
As you travel the country and you talk to people, are we as divided as the people in Washington would like us to believe?
You know, it's weird. When I started working on the show, I started doing the breaking in the branding material last January. And we were, as it's gone on and on a daily basis, you know, there's like five screw ups a day. There's five crazy things in the news every day. People have kind of lightened up. I think we all get that we better start coming together again. There's some Trump jokes in there, but also, and here's the thing I said, if anybody out there laughed at one Obama fried chicken joke, you're going to laugh at some Trump jokes. All right. But the reality of the show is at the end of the day, I just want to bring the country back together. You know, the more they keep us fighting, the more they keep running stuff, taking our money, taking our health care, raising our taxes. So I think I'm just trying to bring the country together one drunk audience at a time. That's my entire point.
Yeah, well, obviously, we know the guy in the big chair is out of his freaking mind, but are there any heroes in that collection in Washington right now?
I don't know. What do you think? It seems like everybody, I think nobody can actually, like, step up. Who do you think, man? Do you have anybody?
No, nobody. No, why would they be there if they could help us?
It's always some weird senator you've never heard of. You know, it's like there was a woman the other day that said something about Trump. She said that she goes, "I really don't need to be lectured about the military by a guy who got five draft deferments." And I was like, "Oh!" It almost turned into a rap battle. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, like, Tammy Duckworth, who I think lost her legs in the Iraq War.
That's who it was. Yeah,
she can speak up. Man, oh man.
There's a great picture of the woman from Washington, the senator from Washington, was sitting behind Schumer and McConnell, and the look on her face when they were both talking. You got to go look it up, man. It is the funniest thing. She has this look on her face like we all feel. Like, you know, oh my God, I just want to put a bullet in my own brain right now. So I think it's time we laugh about this crap. At the end of the day, it's time to stop taking it so serious and laugh at it, because we're going to get a new idiot in 4 years anyway. We're going to get another idiot and then another idiot. And hopefully, if we can come together, we can actually get somebody who's not an idiot.
That's a certainly optimistic view of things here. Now, I have to ask you this, because we were listening to the podcast, Christopher. Is it true, and God, I hope it is, that Norwegians smell like citrus and magic?
Yeah. My assistant, I write those, when I do the podcast, the Titus podcast, I write this thing called the Armageddon Update, and I was, and my assistant called me laughing. He goes, "Dude, that's the funniest line you've ever written." I'm like, "Wow, how bad do I suck if that's the funniest line I've ever written?" But yeah, Norwegians do smell like citrus and magic. Yes, they do.
which is better than what I was expecting, which is, what is it, lutefisk that they make out in Minnesota? I don't even, something, some part of a fish that nobody wants to eat.
Yeah, fish and cheese was my second choice, but I thought a citrus and magic was better.
I like that. It makes me wish I were Norwegian. Hey, tell us a little bit about, if you can, Chris, tell us a little bit about the movie. You've been working on it for a while, and now it's out there and ready to go. Special Unit, the movie.
I have a lot of friends who are disabled. They don't get a shot in Hollywood. In fact, Hollywood talks a great game about them. And they're like, these guys, we love the disabled, but they will not put them in a movie. And if they do put them in a movie, it's Brad Pitt playing a disabled guy. So I wrote this movie due to the Fairness and Disabilities Act. The LAPD has to hire 4 handicapped undercover detectives. And I play Nick Nolte's mugshot plus 40% more scumbag. I'm the worst guy. And I'm an alcoholic and calling them retards. And I wrote it because I have friends that are disabled and it's so weird how they get treated. You hang around them long enough, you start to see how they get treated. And they get dismissed. And so I kind of wrote my character to be all those incidents. I wrote my character to be the worst guy. And it's on Amazon now, and it's on Apple TV, and it's on Google Play. And it's all 5-star reviews. I think we've got like 155 star reviews now. It's really a good movie. Really funny. Really wrong.
Which I love that. When you're wearing a lot of hats, like an actor, director, producer, writer, who do you complain to when you're not happy?
I would just go home, stare in the mirror, and yell at myself. I have to be honest. I had Billy Gardell on the set. Me and Billy were friends. Billy's kind of like my Yoda. Like I would get, you know, we had some prop guys that were like slowing everything down, and we raised the money ourselves and had it made. And Billy, I'd go to Billy, and Billy would just sit down and just talk me through it. I didn't stab anybody, which probably would have helped the film because I got more press.
We're talking with Christopher Titus, and you've been in the comedy business for a long, long time. People who remember the TV series fondly, like we do, thought you came out of nowhere, but there was a lot of work that went into it. The landscape has changed so much that there are more opportunities to get your work out there without having the middleman, but it also means you've got to do a lot more of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, man, it's a lot of hustle. But at the end of the day, here's the thing. At the end of your life, do you want to know that you basically had your idea taken, bastardized, switched, stepped on by somebody who wasn't even a comic that just ran a network? Or do you want to do exactly what's in your head and your heart, get it done, put it out there, and you may not make as much money, but at least you can say I did that. And if it sucks, it's my fault, too. And I'm used to that. I'm so used to it being my fault that I'm fine with it.
What's more dysfunctional, Washington or Hollywood?
I think Hollywood's trying to do good things. Washington seems to be, they're all making money on themselves. But I think Harvey Weinstein aside, and Bill Cosby aside, and Kevin Spacey. Okay, Hollywood. Hollywood's way worse. Sorry, animalistic people. I realized that I cannot defend Hollywood either. Holy crap.
I know that one of your comedy role models is a hero to a lot of us, and that's George Carlin. What was it about his work that made you look up and say, I'd like to do something like he did?
There's a bit in the new show called We, They, Them that's very Carlin-esque. I think it's his writing. You know, so many comics I know will get up on stage and they'll just kind of come up with a rough idea, get on stage and start kind of like pounding through it, trying to find funny. I sit down, Carlin was a writer. He sat down and wrote everything. He was a master of words. And that's why I like Patton Oswalt, too. So I'll sit down and write. Bill Burr, I was doing a show, and so I asked Bill Burr to come watch it before we taped it and at a club. And Bill, I had my computer open backstage, and Burr looks at my computer and he goes, you write this crap down? Are you serious? I'm like, don't you? He goes, nah, just get up there, tell it's funny. And I just don't think that's fair to the audience. I want to be able to have hard jokes and then make them better with my performance. So Carlin, I think to this day, whenever a comic tells me how great they are or something, I go watch We Are All Disease. Go watch these 3 bits from Carlin. And then, because what it does is it makes you feel like you should quit comedy and be a welder. That's how good Carlin is.
You've talked so much about your own family and the challenges that you faced there through the years, and people love to laugh at it. But I have to imagine, too, you've had a lot of people who've reached out and said, dude, that's my story, too. I had similar things happen.
Yeah, I call that the bonus, man. People come to me. It's so funny because all my specials, I've done 7 now, this is my 8th one, and I forgot the 9th one in my head. The next one's called Stories I Shouldn't Tell, and my family's probably going to sue me, but that's not the point. The point is, people come up to me and they'll go, dude, I just want to tell you Norman Rockwell changed my life, or Love is Evil made it so I didn't kill myself after my divorce, and that's the bonus. You know, it's got to be funny first, but years ago I saw Lily Tomlin do Signs of Intelligent Life, and it was really funny and really amazing, and the character work was great. But at the end, it kind of had a point without making a point. I try to make a point without making a point. I don't want to be, man, for the last thing I want to be is preachy. You know, you just don't want to be preachy to a Hallmark movie. But if at the end, if I, like this movie, this, like I always pick something to design a show about. This show is to bring America together, you know, and that's why it's all about politics, which is probably the dumbest, hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But I think you have to pick something, what it's about, and then, you know, and then, like, go for it. Just go for it full out. And it takes me about a year and 2 months to get something really good. And then we're going to tape it. We're going to tape this one in 3 months. So if you come to the show, you're not going to see it when I'm reading it off paper. Sometimes people show up and I take a ream of paper out. I can just see them go, oh, great, he's practicing. Sorry, guys.
And the best comedy, obviously, and you've proven that for years, it comes from a place of truth.
Yeah, I always tell comics, you know, the comics will say, how do you do what you do? And I just say, you got to be honest. But I'll see a comic, you know, comics have a tendency where, especially young guys, they try to make it general. And the more specific you get, the better it is. Because we're all human beings. We've all experienced something like it. So I'll tell comics, you know, guys like, you ever notice when you go to get in the shower? I'm like, dude, tell a specific story about you taking a shower, why you wrote that bit. You're going to get the same jokes, but it's going to be about you. And here's the cool thing about storytelling, that the audience, it's weird. They get tuned into you and they start leaning forward. I get, nothing's unfunnier than talking about how comedy works. So I apologize to everybody.
Christopher,
like, there's a joke in this new show. Like it's funny because this show was hard because I had to go all over the country. You know, I don't want it to work in one area, and I didn't check. I wrote it and I didn't check where I was going. And I, you know, because I've been doing this so long, I call my agent on Monday. I want to go this week, and they go Alabama. I was like, oh, no, I am not going to Alabama because Kevlar is expensive, my friend. I was there, and it was like, and there was people in the audience that had obviously swamp boated in, and I was on stage working out these Trump jokes, and there was a dude with a beard and a dude with a jersey, a red, white, and blue jersey. It said 40, it's in Huntsville, Alabama, 45 on his chest, and it said Trump on the shoulders. And I was doing this show about kind of what a Nimrod we've elected. And they're both staring at me. They put their arms crossed. The women were at the table laughing, but these guys are staring at me. And there's a joke I do in the show. The joke goes, we didn't want a vagina in the White House, so we voted for the other side of the taint. And this dude with the beard, his eyes opened up, and he fought it, and he went, all right, damn it, that's pretty funny. All right. And I thought, comedy can heal a nation. That's what we're going to do.
There you go. Christopher, we've been fans of your work for a long, long time. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
That's Christopher Titus here on The Best of Downtown. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll get a little pre-Hype Week Patriots talk. Mike Lowe, the Press Herald, next on Downtown.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Penobscot Theater presents...
My name is Albert Sody, and have I got a buck story for you.
Come up to camp for a deer hunting tall tale by actor Jeff Daniels.
Takes place in the Sody Deer Camp, just north of Escanaba, Michigan. That's in the Upper Peninsula, for those of you that don't know nothing.
Escanaba in the Moonlight, February 1st through the 18th at Bangor's Historic Opera House.
There's a couple of things that need to be explained. First is, in the UP, we don't explain things.
Tickets at 942-3333 and PenobscotTheater.org.
Honey, what's all that barking in the neighborhood?
The dogs are saying something.
Let's listen closer.
You know, Green Acres Kennel Shop in Bangor is more than our home away from home. They're your pet food superstore. My owners have always trusted Green Acres Kennel Shop for the best price and selection. They carry a large variety of Nutrisource pet foods formulated with the best ingredients and made with integrity. Ooh, they even have a rewards program. I save my owner's money by earning points for every purchase.
We interrupt this message to bring you the cats of the neighborhood.
Meow. It's not all about the dogs around here. Don't forget your feline friends. Green Acres Kennel Shop is my parents' pet food headquarters. They buy me the best brands of dry and canned choices.
Well, dear, the dogs and cats around here know best. Time to make Green Acres Kennel Shop our new pet food store.
Green Acres Kennel Shop, Union Street, Bangor. Online at greenacreskennel.com. We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, a home away from home.
It's Best of Downtown with you on a Sunday on the Pulse.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you something. I think you'll understand.
Rich Kimball, Kerry Haskell with you. Every Monday we visit with Mike Lowe, the Portland Press Herald. And, of course, last Monday when we chatted with Mike, it was on the heels of that dramatic come-from-behind victory over the New England Patriots that, well, we've all come to expect through the years. As you summed up in your piece in the Portland Press Herald, three simple words, not done yet.
That's true. This team, they're you know, it's not about what they've done in the past. It's about what they're going to do going forward, and that's what they focus on. That's their, everything they do, everything they work on is about the next game, and they've got one more game left.
Nothing should surprise us with this team, but my goodness, it seems like they just keep finding new ways to do this, and this week it was all the distraction and the curiosity about Brady and the thumb, which we learned late yesterday was probably worse than people have thought it was, 11 or 12 stitches or so and a bloody mess, and yet there he is out there completing his first six passes of the game and just continuing to burnish his legacy as the greatest.
Well, you know, and I think just about everyone in the locker room that I talked to said, you know, he's the toughest guy they've ever met, physically and mentally, and he doesn't let things set him back. And you know, he admitted in the press conference afterwards that he wasn't sure, you know, when it immediately happened, if he was going to be able to play on yesterday, because it was that bad. It was, the cut was that bad. It was bleeding that badly. And you know, they were worried that it just wouldn't heal in time. But between the Patriots trainers and his personal trainer, Alex Guerrero, and everything, they fixed, finagled it enough, put the stitches in, and certainly, shored the thumb up so that he was able to play. You know, he wasn't able to go on Thursday, but he got a little work in on Friday, and Saturday was all about let's see how we can, you know, protect this finger so that it's not going to get any worse, and that so that he can play on Sunday.
Well, it was an open heart surgery after all, as Bill Belichick said.
Yes, Bill Belichick, it's just a thumb, just a flesh wound. That's all it is.
That's it. Yes, I'm not dead yet. There was some emotion though on the sidelines, and more than we usually see. And I assume part of that is the realization that at least for this group as it's constituted, this is the last go round for some of them.
There was, you know, the hug between Belichick and Matt Patricia at the end was really genuine. I mean, you know, a lot of people talk about how heartless Bill Belichick is, but you know what? He cares about every player in that locker room and every coach underneath him. At least that's what the players tell me. You know, we don't see it often, you know, but it was on display yesterday, and it's going to be, you know, the gang's going to be broken up. It's you know, Patricia, you know, was supposedly going to Detroit, and Josh McDaniels is having another interview in Indianapolis, and I'm pretty sure he'll end up there, and you know, it's kind of like 2004 all over again. You know, Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel were both rumored the weeks leading up to the Super Bowl against Philadelphia to be leaving, you know, and now we get two coaches rumored to be leaving, and they're playing Philadelphia again.
Well, it's interesting, too, Mike, and you talk about that emotion and that relationship, and I'll never forget that years ago when Maine football went out to Iowa, and we spent a fair amount of time with Kirk Ferentz out there, and he talked about Belichick, just with us, about how loyal Bill Belichick was to him and his family, how he had, one of his sons who I think had a tryout with the Patriots and didn't make it, but Belichick hired him to be in some sort of ancillary role with the team. And the people who've worked with him almost universally talk about his incredible friendship and loyalty. So there is that other side that he keeps hidden from the average fan.
There is. And look, you can't be that successful without getting people to want to work for you. You know, if he's just awful guy to work for, why would you stay there? Why would you care whether he looks good and whether you win or not? You have to really, you know, you have to have that bond with your players. They have to trust you to know that you're going to put them in the best situation to win the game. And he does that. He, you know, the players always tell us how he'll come walking through the locker room and he'll be joking and talking to them about, like, you know, everyday things. And then the switch is flipped, and it's all football. And it's all about, what are we going to do here to take away their run? What are we going to do here? If the cornerback's got his left foot back instead of his right foot, how are we going to attack him? When are we going to go at him? If the linebacker is 6 inches outside more than he normally is, what are we going to do on this play? It's all, you know, there's the football side and there's the personal side, and he blends the two of them perfectly to get this team in position every week to win.
We're talking with Mike Lowe here on Downtown. Well, on the field, obviously Brady was tremendous, more so knowing the condition of the thumb. But once again, Danny Amendola proved he is about as clutch a guy in big games as anyone we've seen.
Oh, it's amazing how he steps up and has stepped up, especially these last 2 years in the playoffs. He has, you know, someone was saying yesterday, arguably he's been their best player the last 2 years in the playoffs. He just, in terms of making huge plays. I mean, that winning touchdown catch was not easy. It was a high throw, which really, you needed a high throw in that situation. Brady put it where Amendola was the only guy who was going to get it. And then to tap the both feet in bounds within inches of going out of bounds, that's just a tremendous football play. And everyone in the locker room talked about, you know, how great he is in those situations. Matthew Slater, who's very close friends with Amendola, said his hand-eye coordination is better than anyone he's ever played with in his life. And he says, and I played with Randy Moss. He says, Danny Amendola's hand-eye coordination is at an elite level, and that's why he can come up with those catches in the big moments.
And it seemed appropriate after some of the highs and lows of the season that when you needed a big play on the defense, there was Gilmore coming up with it.
That was a tremendous play, simply tremendous play. And a lot of people, he's been maligned a lot this year by fans who, he's given up. Frankly, he gave up all the big plays he came up, gave up were early in the season. Mm. The last half of the season, he was their best defensive back, by far, best cornerback. There's no question. And yesterday, three plays before, he ends the game, essentially, he gives up a 20-yard pass completion to Westbrook. And that was a play in which Westbrook made a tremendous play to catch the ball. And when you're a cornerback, you have to forget about that. And he did. And, he comes back with the play of the game defensively to bat that ball away and put them in the Super Bowl again.
And
it was good to see. It was really good to see. And the guys in the locker room really like him. They feel that he's worked harder than anyone to get to this point this year.
And another big fourth quarter play by James Harrison.
You know what? He's already played, 10 times more plays than he did when he was with the Steelers. It's amazing how he has come in, and he's made such a huge impact on this team in terms of setting the edge on the run and just getting to the passer. And he's setting an example, a great example for the young kids in that locker room. Of what you can do if you just keep yourself ready every moment to get in there and make the play.
Was it a cheap shot on Rob Gronkowski?
I don't think it was a cheap shot. It was a football shot. You know, it's a guy who's going to make a play, and Gronkowski was twisting in the air. I don't think he could have avoided hitting him. It was a heck of a shot. I mean, I was amazed that Gronkowski even got up and walked off the field. It was that hard of a hit. But I don't think it was cheap. It was an unavoidable hit.
Do we know yet if he'll be around for Super Bowl time?
Well, I know in a couple of press conferences today, Matthew Slater said that he spoke to him today and he seemed in good spirits. I mean, he's got a clear concussion protocol. That's essentially what it is. I mean, they're not going to tell us exactly what the injury is, but we just know it was a head injury, and usually when they say a head injury, that means a concussion. And they're fairly confident that he'll be ready, but these things can last for a long time.
Mike Lowe for the Portland Press Herald on Downtown. When we come back, we talk with an actress who was such a big star in the 80s, so many terrific movies, stepped away from acting for a while to raise her family, is back working with family. We had a wonderful conversation with her. Actress Diane Franklin coming up after the break here on The Pulse, WZON.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
At this busy time of year, there's nothing better than a place that offers you one-stop shopping. That place is G&M Family Market on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. Fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, of course a Dunkin' Donuts and an Amato's right on site. Stop into G&M Family Market every day of the week from 6 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, and if they don't have what you're looking for, they'll make every effort to get it next time. G&M Family Market, Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Go Blue!
Sir, you're here for the cheerleading tryouts?
Yeah, for the class of 82. Gotta show my school spirit.
I know a better way. The UMaine Alumni Signature Rewards Visa Card from University Credit Union. Low rates, no annual fees, and it earns reward points for travel, merchandise, or cash back.
Woo, sounds easier than a backflip.
Apply online today at UMaineAlumniCard.com.
Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions apply, subject to credit approval.
It's game time at the Oriental Jade. Score. Two poo-poo platters, a big pork fried rice, and the Jade's new dragon tenders for just $25. Takeout and delivery from the Oriental Jade, Maine's authentic Asian dining experience next to Bangor Mall. How hungry are you? Two poo-poo platters, a big pork fried rice, and the Jade's new dragon tenders for just $25. Takeout and delivery from the Oriental Jade. Begin your experience now at Oriental Jade.
Our next guest on Downtown starred in so many memorable movies from the 1980s, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, The Last American Virgin, Better Off Dead. Diane Franklin has stepped away from the movie business for a while, but is back and working with her daughter, who is a film director. We had a chance to catch up with her this week on Downtown and talk about her career and this new reemergence into the acting scene.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
I have to ask you, right off the top, do you get tired of having middle-aged guys tell you about the crush they had on you back in the 80s?
No. I don't think anyone could ever get sick of that. But it is always actually a surprise, you know. I always thought maybe Phoebe Cates would be the girl that people would be, you know, saying that about, or I don't know, Molly Ringwald. But it is truly an honor and a compliment that people had a crush on me, and you know, perhaps that helped them, you know, fall in love later on in their life.
Absolutely. Now, I also wanted to ask you too, after reading your book, do you still know all the words to Harper Valley PTA?
Oh my gosh, thank you for saying that. Yes, I do. I want to tell you. No, I you know, that was a very nerve-wracking experience, but I have to say, like, you know, I went, and I've always loved acting, and I started really young. And I didn't have anyone in the family who was an actor. It really just came from me. I think maybe perhaps the influence of television at the time. And, you know, when I stayed home a lot. My parents didn't, you know, they were working class parents, and I watched TV, and I think I always felt like I wanted to be on TV, and I just went after what I wanted to do, you know.
Cool. And they gave you the opportunity to do that, taking you to auditions at a very early age.
Yeah, you know, I have to say something that's so interesting. My parents were not in the business at all. They had no desire for me to be an actress at all, but they had me later in life, and I think that sort of, sometimes parents are exhausted by the time, like, the kid, last kid comes, or, you know, if they have an only child later in life. And so they would just, like, say, you know, they just backed me and believed in me because I think they loved me. They really loved me. And they just wanted to see me happy, and they saw how much joy it brought me. So, they would say, what are we going to do with this child? I was like, okay. Like, you know, my parents would just, you know, support me. And I didn't give up. You know, I wanted to do it since I was four. I mean, for my book, if you're interested, my book tells the background of how I became an actress and how I, you know, came from a place where I had no connections. But I was persevering, and I started so young wanting to do it. And then over the years, they just, you know, they believed me, and then they said, okay, we'll do some lessons. And so it grew from my desire.
And your mom was German, your father was Austrian, and it was your sister, I believe, who said, when you were born, give her an American name, for goodness sakes.
Yes, yes, which is hilarious. My sister is a half-sister, but her name was Ursula, and she was born in Europe. And so when they came to America, they were like, thank goodness for my sister. Thank goodness. She just said, call her Diane. So I think it's great because I don't really meet a lot of Dianes, and it's always like Diana, or I don't even know, just people aren't commonly named that. So it was great. I like the name.
And when you went to auditions, you had a different look than what a lot of people thought was in vogue at the time, in an era where everybody was after, you know, maybe the next Charlie's Angel. We're looking for blonde haired, straight haired people. And you had a different and perhaps a more cosmopolitan look in many ways.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that. I actually, my first book that you mentioned is out, but I also wrote another one this year, last year, and it came out last year. It was called The Excellent Curls, so if you look for curls. And the reason I wrote the book was exactly for that reason. What happened was I was modeling for years, and I straightened my hair. And it was a complete, and I got work, but I never could get a lead. I never could get a big part. And it was a complete accident that I let my hair go curly one day. It was raining. It was New York. It was humid. There was nothing I could do to fight it. And I got the opportunity. It was a story, a very cool story. I was taking an exam at school, and I wound up saying I had a better chance of being a movie star than I did passing the exam. So I went to the audition, and it was the right timing. The people who were casting me were European. And that was, they found that beautiful, and I just left my hair curly. And after that, except for Amityville, which was sort of a hiccup in my career, because the first film I did, which was Last American Virgin, didn't come out until both these films, Amityville and Last American Virgin, sort of came out around the same time. And so after that, everybody wanted me to just have curly hair, and I booked lead after lead after lead. So I have to say that the look, it was the right time, the timing. America was ready for girls to look different. I had a more ethnic, more exotic look. And all I can tell you for me personally was I was really happy to have teenagers be able to go out of the house. You know, you didn't have to, like, blow dry your hair anymore. You could actually get curly hair. Just walk out of the house and go to school. What a gift. So that was my contribution to culture.
We're talking with Diane Franklin here on Downtown. And you mentioned in the book, too, that having European parents and also a European sensibility really served you well in those early acting roles because of a number of things, including your comfort with your own body.
Yes, I'm a very sort of proponent of acting is body and voice. And if you are an actor and you think that that's, you know, you're not using your body, well, that's just not, you're not telling a story, right? So for me, in my career, I have done nudity, but the nudity was part of the story. And the feeling I had was also because my parents were European. It was just a different way of looking at it. The body, you know, is beautiful, but obviously you don't want it to be exploitive, you know? So to me, my my judgment was, you know, I wouldn't mind. I don't mind doing the nudity. I mean, I'm not saying that I would, you know, take off my clothes for anything. But if it made sense in the story, then, and it was important to the story, and it created more vulnerability of the characters, that to me was good. And I only did nudity in 3 films. But the other thing about it, so as an actress, is a lot of times when you act, you're thinking, oh my gosh, like, I'm only going to be hired because of this. And what that did for me was those films was show that I could do other characters. I mean, it wasn't just that. I could do other things. So I think as an actress, you want to be able to show everything you can do. And I mean, that probably sounds kind of like a suggestion, but actually it has to do with the roles, you know, you play. And so you want to be able to show all of you. And I think that body is part of that. And I think you have to have pride in your body. I think we've even found out today, like, you know, how important it is to take care of your body. And if you work out and you exercise, well, you should be proud, because that's something that, you know, you've taken good care of yourself. You should be proud of yourself if you're, you know, for whatever body shape you are as well. So anyway, yeah, none of this body shaming anymore. Let's stop it, right?
Well, and, you know, you think back, Last American Virgin is one of those classic teen films of the 80s. But I went back and rewatched it. And I'd forgotten how incredibly poignant and powerful that final scene of the film is.
Yeah, that film was so interesting. When I did the movie, you know, we all didn't think this film would even come out, because at the time, you know, only films that were really, really big films would get in the theaters. I mean, you know, like Officer and Gentleman, you know, these like huge films that they were just big films. And so when we did it, we weren't even sure it was going to be there. And then the script also has 2 tones. It's got this like light tone, this, you know, kind of sex comedy, upbeat, kind of like, you know, silly thing. But then it's got this very serious storyline that is unforgettable. So to me, the end of that film, because of that film, first of all, it's an 80s. If you've never seen the film, you've got to see it, because it is an 80s time capsule. My hair is the first film that had curly hair. I was the one who kickstarted everyone with the curly hair. The clothing, the music, the subject matter, you know, it really was a time where there was a lot more freedom, and you see that freedom of the 80s in that film. It was also at Lincoln Center. It was shown at Lincoln Center a couple of years ago. It's actually just an amazing film, because of the story it tells is timeless. So, and I think everybody can identify with it. And honestly, I think it is also a sex education film for guys. I think every guy should see it, because you're going to learn about life and love, you know.
Let's talk about one of my favorite films of yours, your work on Better Off Dead. And what was it like working with Savage Steve Holland?
Oh, it was fantastic. For those of you who don't know, I play a French girl. I talk like this. So don't get confused. oh, my gosh. Savage was brilliant, amazing. It was so much fun working with him as such a young guy. I think he was like 24, 25 when he was directing the film. I mean, and at that time, that was not happening. And also the type of humor it was an upbeat, fun film. To have that come out in a theater was shocking. It was an exploitive. It wasn't abusive. It was just like a fun film. And I think critics found it really hard to even give it a fair review at that time, because they were kind of expected to tell people, you know, well, you're spending your hard-earned $5 to go to a movie. We're going to have to give you something really, you know, heavy. But that film, wow, it was amazing. It was such a great film. He is a wonderful guy. And I've always loved working with Steve Savage. He's just a dream. And everybody, by the way, on that film was wonderful. If you want more detail, just go check out my first book, Excellent Ventures. You'll get the details.
And you also got to work with one of our favorite guests on the show, Curtis Armstrong.
Oh, I love Curtis. You know, and to this day, I mean, we've done some conventions together with Curtis, and also with Amanda Wiss. We stay in touch. We were real friends. And I have to say, even John, you know, we're all very, you know, just really nice people, and we all get along. And And yeah, Curtis is a sweetheart. So I'm really glad you got Curtis on.
Now, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the part of Princess Joanna, one of the princesses, it wasn't the biggest part you've ever had. And yet you wrote in your first book that it might be the role that people mention to you most often when they see you.
Yes, that's a really good point. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures had a universal message, which is be excellent to each other. Be excellent, which I talk with an English accent. Again, I have a different voice in that film. And I think it's interesting because that film could go all travel all over the world. Whereas, you know, maybe certain other countries may have a, you know, they may not be able to show something which is, you know, has nudity, or there might be some, you know, political issue of showing a film. But that film has traveled all over the world. So it's interesting because it's actually the most, I would say, universally known film of the films, the 80 films I've done. And what's really amazing about that film is that the princess, the other princess, Kimberly LaBelle, and I are actually going to, are still seeing each other. We actually are going to be announcing a band at the K-Earth concert this weekend at in Anaheim at the Honda Center. And also there's another K-Earth music show at the Microsoft Theater. So that's happening. Plus, they're going to do another Bill and Ted's. And I think an article came out today about that happening and about it moving forward, and that there will be princesses in that film. So keep your eye open, because I might be coming back in that film as
Very
well.
Cool. We're talking with Diane Franklin here on Downtown. So let me ask you this, not to put you on the spot here. What made you the most excellent babe of the 80s?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I will tell you why. I think that, first of all, I think a lot of it is, you know, it brings back the films I've been in and the roles I've played bring back great memories for people, and they make them feel really good. So I think part of being the most excellent babe is bringing happiness and bringing back those memories of when you were a kid and what you were experiencing. Also, I think the range of my acting of, I could do drama, and I did a movie called Terrorvision, which was funny, and I did, you know, there's of course Last American Virgin, very serious, but I also did a movie called Amityville to The Possession, and this is a wonderful story because not only was I acting in the 80s, but I am now, this year is going to come out a film, The Amityville Murders, where now I play the mother. So I've played the daughter. I played the daughter in the film in the early 80s, 82, I think it came out, or 83. And then now I play the mother. So look out for this. It's called The Haunting on Long Island, The Amityville Murders. And it's, I don't know any other actress who's been called to play a different role in somewhat of the same film. It's a docudrama. And it's unbelievably exciting. And I have to tell you, best acting I've ever done in my life. I am so excited about this film.
Well, you took time away to focus on family, but what's great is it's come full circle. Not only are you back and acting, but both of your children are involved in performing, and you've worked with your daughter Olivia in a number of her films.
Yes, you know, I have, again, why am I most excellent? Because I have actually had a blessed life, and I've been able to act my whole life. My children are also performing. I adore my children. My husband and I, gosh, we've been married. He's my only husband. I'm first husband, only on this. I mean, I think we've been married a long time, maybe almost 28 years or 20. I mean, we've been together. And I really just felt like for me as a woman, you know, there's the windows of opportunity in your life, and you must focus on that for yourself. So there was a time where I acted, and then I went and had my family, and then I'm now teaching, and I also now am acting again. And so you focus on, you know, time with your animals. You spend time, and you really give your heart to what you're doing, and just know that there'll be time again for you to do whatever you want to do. So spreading yourself thin, I think, is hard. I think it's difficult, but that happened. And one more thing, I actually graduated from college. I finally did get my college degree last year. So, yeah, I'm kind of a person who I love to live life, and I don't feel my daughter gave me the greatest compliment ever. And I just have to say this just recently. She said, "Mom, you are Diana in Wonder Woman." She said, "That is you." And I said, "You know what? I think you're right.
Well, I have to tell you, the book was a delight to read. Enjoyed your work in the 80s.
Thank
and
you.
Look forward to seeing your work here in 2018 as well. And I don't know, can a man say this to a woman here in 2018? You look fantastic.
Yes. Oh, and you know, yes, you absolutely can. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. You know, I still try to take, you know, good care of myself. And I think, you know, that's such an important part of, you know, our lives, you know. Be excellent to yourself, too, right? Be excellent to each other and be excellent to yourself.
Actress Diane Franklin here on The Best of Downtown as we wrap it up on a Sunday morning. Our program brought to you, as always, by Quirk Auto Group, quirkauto.com. It's your car. Find it at Quirk. Hope you have a very nice Sunday. We appreciate you making us part of your weekend. Tomorrow, we're back. Got a great afternoon show for you. One of her favorites, Carrie. Can't wait to have Stephen Tobolowsky back on.
Yeah, the One Day at a Time is just a great, great series, and he's a big part of it, which is a change from the original. Mm. The employer, he's the doctor that employs the lead character, and yeah, he's got a great role.
Sure does. The second season of One Day at a Time dropped this weekend on Netflix. I had a chance to see a number of episodes. And yeah, it is absolutely terrific. Stephen joins us tomorrow to talk about that. Plus, we've got Mike Lowe back again. It's Monday. He'll talk Patriots, get us ready for the Super Bowl. Movie reviews from Alan Adams of the Maine Edge and Maine baseball coach Nick Durba. Plus, a healthy, active living minute from our friends at St. Joe's Health here. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon at 4 for Downtown here on the Pulse. Casey Kasem up next with American Top 40. You're gone.